Thanks for listening to our podcast. We've got more information and additional resources at probe.org/podcast. And be sure to check out our life-changing Summer Mind Games Camp for high school and college students.
It's a tough subject, but we must confront the effects of this plague. Kirby Anderson addresses the influence of pornography now on Probe.
Pornography has been tearing apart the very fabric of modern society, but the problem has been made worse with pornography's proliferation through the Internet. Now, studies show that 40 million adults regularly visit Internet pornography sites. Now, to put that in perspective, that is 10 times the amount of people who regularly watch baseball. You know, when I first started writing about pornography in the 1980s, it was already a multi-billion dollar a year business, mostly promoted through so-called adult bookstores and pornographic magazines. With the development of videos, DVDs, and the internet, pornography has become ubiquitous. The wages of sin are enormous when pornography is involved. Revenue from internet porn exceeds by nearly a 2-to-1 ratio the combined revenues of ABC, CBS, and NBC. And sales of pornographic material on the internet suppress the cumulative sales of all other products sold online. The current estimate is that there are over 4 million pornographic websites representing almost 400 million pages of pornographic material. Pornography is not just something a few men do in the late hours in the privacy of their homes. At least 70% of porn is downloaded during work hours from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., and a percentage of those do so actually admitting that they actually access pornography at work. And pornography also affects those in the church. According to Leadership Journal, 40% of pastors admit to visiting a pornographic website. And at one Promise Keepers convention, 53% of men admitted to visiting a porn site the week before. Now, the impact pornography is having on young people is alarming. It used to be that when you would ask someone when they first saw pornography, they would tell you a story about seeing a porn magazine at a friend's house when they were in middle school or high school. Now, a child in grade school has already seen images that were only available in an adult bookstore a few years ago. At one time, these images were inaccessible to youth. Now, they're merely a mouse click away. The average age of first exposure to internet pornography is 11 years old, and the largest consumer of internet pornography is the 12 to 17 age group. So how should we define pornography? And what is the effect on individuals and society? And what is the impact both psychologically and socially? And what is a biblical perspective on all of this? Well, I deal with each of these questions in detail in my book, Christian Ethics in Plain Language, and tomorrow we'll begin by answering some of these questions.
You've been listening to Probe with your host, Kirby Anderson. Get your free copy of Kirby's transcript on pornography at probe.org. You can also order his book, Christian Ethics in Plain Language, there as well. Again, that's probe.org. And join us next time here on Probe.
How should we define pornography? Well, pornography has been defined as material that is predominantly sexually explicit and intended primarily for the purpose of sexual arousal. Hardcore pornography, therefore, is defined as sexually explicit in the extreme and devoid of any other apparent content or purpose. Now, another important term is obscenity. In the 1973 Supreme Court case of Miller v. California, the justices set forth a three-part test to define obscenity. A. The average person, applying contemporary community standards, would find the work taken as a whole appeals to the prurient interest. B. The work describes or depicts in a patently offensive way sexual conduct specifically defined by the applicable state law. And C. The work taken as a whole lacks serious literary, artistic, political, or scientific value. Now, what are the types of pornography? Well, the first type of pornography is adult magazines, which are primarily directed towards adult male readers. The magazines with the widest distribution do not violate the Miller standards of obscenity and thus can be legally distributed. The second type of pornography is video. Video cassettes or DVDs are rented or sold in most adult bookstores and on the internet, and they have become a growth industry for pornography. The third type of pornography is motion pictures. Rating standards are being relaxed, and many pornographic movies are being shown and distributed carrying R and NC-17 ratings. Many of these so-called hard R-rated films would have been considered obscene just a few decades ago. A fourth type of pornography is television. As in motion pictures, standards for commercial television have been continuously lowered. But cable television poses an even greater threat because the Federal Communications Commission does not regulate cable or satellite in the same way that it does public access stations. Thus, many pornographic movies are shown on cable television. A fifth type of pornography is audio porn, which includes dial-a-porn, telephone calls, and really is the second fastest growth market of pornography. Although most of the messages are within the Miller definition of obscenity, these businesses continue to thrive and are often used by children. A sixth and final form of pornography is cyber porn or internet pornography. Virtually anyone can download and view hardcore pictures, movies, online chat, and even live sex acts through the internet. Tomorrow, we'll spend some time talking about how someone becomes addicted to pornography. Victor Klein, a psychologist, documented how men become addicted to pornographic materials and then began to desire more explicit or deviant material and then finally act out what they've seen. He maintained that memories of experiences that occurred at times of emotional arousal, which could include sexual arousal, are actually imprinted on the brain by epinephrine, an adrenal gland hormone, and are very difficult to erase. This may partly explain pornography's addicting effect. Other research showed that biochemical and neurological responses in individuals who are aroused release the adrenal hormone epinephrine in the brain, which is why it is so easy to remember pornographic images seen years before. In response to pleasure, nerve endings release chemicals that reinforce the body's own desire to repeat the process. Kimberly Young, an authority on internet addiction, found that 90% of those who became addicted to cyber porn actually became addicted to the two-way communication functions, chat rooms, news groups, and email. Psychologists have actually identified a five-step pattern in pornographic addiction. The first step is exposure. Addicts have been exposed to pornography in many ways, ranging from sexual abuse as children to looking at widely available pornographic magazines. The second step is addiction. People who continually expose themselves to pornography keep coming back for more and more in order to get new sexual highs. James McClough at the University of California at Irvine said that experiences at times of emotional or sexual arousal get locked in the brain by the chemical epinephrine and become virtually impossible to erase. A third step is escalation. Previous sexual highs become more difficult to attain. Therefore, users of pornography begin to look for more exotic forms of sexual behavior to bring them stimulation. A fourth step is desensitization. What was initially shocking becomes routine. Shocking and disgusting sexual behavior is no longer avoided, but is sought out for more intense stimulation. Concern about pain and degradation get lost in the pursuit of the next sexual experience. And the fifth and final step is acting out fantasies. People do what they have seen and find pleasurable. Not every pornography addict will become a serial murderer or a rapist, but many do look for ways to act out their sexual fantasies. In my book, Christian Ethics in Plain Language, I discuss in further detail the issue of pornographic addiction, as well as describe the social and psychological effects of pornography. Defining the social effects of pornography has been difficult because of some of the prevailing theories of its impact. One theory was that pornography actually performs a positive function in society by acting like a safety valve for potential sexual offenders. The most famous proponent of this theory was Burl Kuczynski, a criminologist at the University of Copenhagen. His famous study on pornography found that when the Danish government lifted restrictions on pornography, the number of sex crimes decreased. Therefore, he concluded that the availability of pornography siphons off dangerous sexual impulses. But when the data for his safety valve theory was further evaluated, many of his research flaws began to show. Now, proving cause and effect in pornography is virtually impossible because ethically, researchers cannot do certain kinds of research. As Dolph Zillman said, men cannot be placed at risk of developing sexually violent inclinations by extensive exposure to violent or nonviolent pornography, and women cannot be placed at risk of becoming victims of such inclinations. Nevertheless, a number of compelling statistics suggest that pornography does have a profound social consequence. For example, of the 1,400 child sexual molestation cases in Louisville, Kentucky between July 1980 and February 1984, adult pornography was connected with each incident and child pornography with the majority of them. Now, extensive interviews with sex offenders, that's rapists and incest offenders and child molesters, have uncovered a sizable percentage of offenders who use pornography to arouse themselves before and during their assaults. Police officers have actually seen the impact pornography has had on serial murders. In fact, pornography consumption is one of the most common profile characteristics of serial murders and rapists. Now, Professor Cass Sunstein, writing in the Duke Law Journal, said that some sexual violence against women would not have occurred but for the massive circulation of pornography. Citing cross-cultural data, he concluded that the liberalization of pornography laws in the United States, Britain, Australia, and the Scandinavian countries has been accompanied by a rise in reported rape rates. In countries where pornography laws have not been liberalized, there has been a less steep rise in reported rapes. And in countries where restrictions have been adopted, reported rapes have decreased. So this week we're talking about the subject of pornography. Tomorrow we will conclude by providing a biblical perspective. God created men and women in His image as sexual beings, but because of sin in the world, sex has been misused and abused. Now, pornography attacks the dignity of men and women created in the image of God. Pornography also distorts God's gift of sex, which should be shared only within the bounds of marriage. When the Bible refers to human sexual organs, it often uses euphemisms and indirect language. Although there are some exceptions, generally Scripture maintains a basic modesty towards a man's or a woman's sexual organs. Moreover, Scripture specifically condemns the practices that result from pornography, such as sexual exposure, adultery, bestiality, homosexuality, incest, and prostitution. Now, a biblical perspective of human sexuality must recognize that sexual intercourse is exclusively reserved for marriage for the following purposes. First, it establishes a one-flesh union, Genesis 2. Second, it provides for sexual intimacy within the marriage bond. The word to know actually indicates a profound meaning of sexual intercourse. Third, sexual intercourse is for the mutual pleasure of husband and wife, Proverbs 5. And fourth, sexual intercourse is for procreation, Genesis 1:28. The Bible also warns against the misuse of sex. Premarital sex and extramarital sex are condemned in 1 Corinthians 6 and 1 Thessalonians 4. And even thoughts of sexual immorality, often fed by pornographic material, are condemned. Moreover, Christians must realize that pornography can have a significant harmful effect on the user. This includes such things as a comparison mentality, a performance-based sexuality, a feeling that only forbidden things are sexually satisfying, increased guilt, decreased self-concept, and obsessive thinking. Finally, Christians should do two things. First, they must work to keep themselves pure by fleeing immorality, 1 Corinthians 6:18, and thinking on those things which are pure, Philippians 4:8. As a man thinks in his heart, so is he, Proverbs 23:7. Christians must make no provision for the flesh, Romans 13. And pornography will fuel the sexual desire in abnormal ways and can eventually lead to even more debased perversion. We therefore must abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul, 1 Peter 2:11. And second, Christians must work to remove the sexual perversion of pornography from society.